what we teach is when you like start talking about stuff that we're going to talk about. However, in this case, it was actually a good starting point for me. I was meditating today on not so much the message tonight, but for just all on all the things that the Spirit's been telling us over the last year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is, and how, and I'll speak for myself, he was just talking about the importance of the time that we're in, and how even I sometimes forget the severity, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but just how important these times are, right? In less than a month, we're going to be starting, or we're supposed to be starting a journey, right? And for those who have been saved for a little while, or who, especially those who have been here for a little while, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but for the longest time I've been looking forward, because we've been taught, what, believer, disciple, servant, master teacher, right? So when I started my process, I was like, all right, well, I'm going to zip through discipleship, or through the believer stage, I'm going to get to discipleship, and in no time I'm going to be serving, right? That was 18 years ago. No, that was 20 years ago that I was thinking that way. And, you know, and sometimes you kind of, you know, sometimes the process kind of becomes, what's the word? It becomes difficult. It becomes, say again? Stagnant. I mean, I'm sure everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about. It's not a pleasant process all the time, or even most of the time. But here we are, right? And in a couple of weeks, some of the things that some of us have been waiting for is here, right? So we're going to dive in like straight into the scripture. And I don't have too much to say tonight, but we're going to go ahead and start with our first verse. Before you read it, though, I want to start with a question that I don't necessarily want you to answer audibly, at least, but I want you to think about before you answer, even internally, about your answer. And the question is, did you follow the Spirit's directive last month? And which directive am I talking about? Say louder.
Close the doors.
The Spirit told us to close certain doors, right? Why did he have us close these doors? Because this month, he intended for us to go through other doors, right? And next month, he wants us to start a journey. But none of that can happen if I don't first close the door, right? So when you read this verse, I want you to look at it as basically the same exact message that the Spirit gave us last month. But we're just rephrasing it. So go ahead, Jonathan.
Therefore, Adonai says, go out from their midst, separate yourselves, don't even touch what is unclean. Then I myself will receive you. In fact, I will be your father, and you will be my sons and daughters, says Adonai Tazvayo.
All right, so Yahweh, what did he say? He says, go out from their midst, separate yourselves, and don't even touch what's unclean. So let's apply that to that message, right? We have this imaginary door here that was a bridge from last season to next season, right? And so if we put that together with what Paul was saying to the Corinthians, what does it tell you about the things that were on the other side of that door? They are unclean. So everything yesterday is now unclean to me, which is why he's telling us to close those doors. So the separation that he's talking about, actually before I go into that, if I don't do that separation, then what does he say? He says, then I myself will receive you. But on the flip side, if I don't, then he won't receive me. Right? And if he doesn't receive me, So separation from those things is what qualifies me to be called clean. And it's what qualifies me to go on the journey. Now we know this concept that every time I step up, every time I get promoted, every time I move forward, there's a new degree of cleanliness and a new degree of separation required of me, right? We know from believer, disciple, and so on and so forth that you have to be more sanctified than you were the year before. So I shouldn't be doing the same things as last year, and next year I shouldn't be doing the same things I'm doing this year. Because a lack of separation, what did he say? If I separate myself, I'm going to be clean. If I don't, let's put another word in there. A lack of separation defiles me. All right? So if I don't go through this door, then what am I? I'm defiled. Right? If I go through this door and I don't close it, what am I? I'm still defiled. So how does it affect the journey next year? It defiles the journey. Yeah, you're taking all that baggage with you. I'll talk about this a little bit more in a second, but you know, I really have no hope. So one thing I can't do is I cannot make the mistake of thinking that the things that he wants me to, doors that he wants me to close, are for things that are inherently sinful. So what does that mean? Right? Some things I have to just leave, not because they're bad, but because they're not, it was not meant to be for me. Right? Or the season ran out. Right? When I was in Verizon, boy, I loved that Verizon for the first few years. Because they, you know, well, it treated me well. Let's put it that way. But then when the time ran out, it was like nothing good was happening there. Like literally nothing good was happening there. Justin can tell you about some of the people. Not good people. And so I had to make a decision, right? Because had I not chosen to leave that place, I wouldn't be here today. And who cares? Who cares if I'm not here today? But if all of us decided we're not going to close those doors, then none of us would be here. So that's a job, right? What are some other things that could potentially defile us that aren't sinful? That's a good one. Yeah, relationships. And that can be a destiny killer. If you're in the wrong one and you just insist on maintaining it, right? Sorry? How so? That's good. I mean, because like anything that doesn't produce life is going to produce death, right? And so what are we looking forward to in this next month?
Life.
Well, in specific, we're looking forward to taking this journey, right? But you can't take this journey if you're dead. And, I'm not really being facetious because you can't. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maturity. Yeah.
Confidence and everything has to be intensified. So
gonna do about this kid?
Wow.
I gotta keep him safe. You know? He's learning how to drive. I took him driving this week. I'm like, man, if this kid crashes, he's under the age of accountability. You know. But in 3 years, you know, bets are off. But no, that's a good one. You know, we have to let go because, yeah, there are children, but they're his children too. You know, I can't. The same way I have to cede control to him for myself, I got to cede control and trust to him for them. All right, so let's move on. Let's talk about these doors a little bit more. So they provide a way of escape from the path, right, when I leave those doors open, right? Not the good kind of way of escape, right? Because when Scripture talks about it, it says from temptation. But when I leave that door open, there's always that thought that if this doesn't work out the way I want it to, or if I get uncomfortable, then I can always
turn around.
Yeah, I can always go back. Yeah. So when I provide myself with ways of escape, I guarantee my own failure. It's not a possibility, I guarantee it, right? Because what happens when I consciously leave doors open? Well now, let's rephrase it. Why do I consciously leave doors open? Okay, well, all right. Let's get a little bit more honest with it, though. Okay. That could be true. See, when I leave doors open, it's not because I'm trying to be rebellious. It's not because I don't necessarily trust. I leave doors open because I intend to go back through the door. And I'll be honest with you. Because if I really don't want to go through that door again, what am I going to do? I'm going to close it, right? So I'm telling myself, yeah, you know, it's behind me. But is it really behind me if I'm conscious that there's access? Well, and that's, and that's different from here, because this is where you're consciously doing it. But what you're talking about, that's why we had to have discernment. If you have discernment, well, I guess it's not the same thing, but it is bad if those doors are open, yeah. But going back to what Ryan says, unless you're consciously not trying to find, to, you know, to be conscious of it, you know, you just have to pray that he shows you. But I think that was the whole idea last month, right? Give me discernment to show me what I have to leave behind, and then I'm going to take that to this month and show me what's open. All right, so what else? They become a point of contact for my adversaries associated with my past life. Sorry. In other words, them demons that were on the other side of the door, you know, they can walk through the door, right? And so there are certain things that they're allowed to do only with permission. You know what I mean? There's certain oppression and things that they do to us because we give them the authority to do so, whether it's explicit or implicit. You know, I don't want to get into all that, but yeah, I don't want to mess with any of that. So when I don't keep the door closed, and that's, and I think that's an important point. Because a door, you know, I can close a door and easily open it, right? Or I can close a door, I can lock it, and I can throw away the key. I have to keep those doors closed. Because even if it's a one-way door and they can't get through, there's always that temptation of peeking through the door. Let's just see how it is over on that side, right? And we saw that with Samson, and it ruined him. So, why are we talking about all this? Right? This has nothing to do with this month's message, but if I don't make sure that those doors are closed, there's no way that I can embark on a future journey. There's no way. I'm going to be stuck in this holding pattern for at least another year. At least. You know, or I may not even make it to next year. says, I do. All the time. All right, so let's do a quick review. We'll go through this message here. In general, what are we talking about this month? What's the theme? Sanctifying the journey, right? So in general, what is sanctification? It's the process of making or declaring something holy, right? So specifically, it's the Spirit preparing something for Him to use. So we have to, look at these concepts of sanctification and holiness, because they're intertwined. I guess I don't know if that's the right word, but they're inseparable, right? In fact, sanctification and holy, they come from the same Hebrew root word, which is sanctification is kadosh, holy is kadosh, and the only difference is verb and adjective. So why are we talking about that? The only reason that He's sanctifying us and sanctifying this journey, there's a singular purpose, which is He's putting us through kadosh so that He can make us kadosh. Sanctification leads to holiness. It only leads to holiness. And without the process, I can't be holy. So, we can't come to church and talk about amen to these processes if it's never my intent to be holy. So, do we really consider those things when we're meditating? Is there that thought that I really want to be holy? I'll take that as a no. For the most part, I think the answer is no. We don't think in those terms for the most part. I want to be holy, right? Because honestly, a lot of us don't even understand what that means, to be set apart. But we have to start thinking in those terms. And we're going to talk about that actually, well, in a few verses we will. Yeah, we'll talk about that. So, why sanctification? Because it's the process that liberates me to go on the journey. We talked about this. It's going to show me the new doors, and it's going to show me the route, the season, and the supply that I need to begin the journey. So this month, as we're sanctifying the journey, we should start getting some specifics about where He wants us to go. Okay? If this is truly what I intend to do, I must also see the dual nature, or the dual sanctification. Right? We're aware of the first one, where I must allow Him to sanctify me. Just talk about that, to be holy. But what's the theme of the month again? Yeah. It's not just me that has to be sanctified, it's the journey has to be sanctified. So what does that mean? I must allow Him to say, okay. Actually, let's go ahead and turn to Hebrews 12, verse 14. And the reality is, no, the journey has to be sanctified in my sight. Right? Because a lot of us are thinking, journey, this is just me going through this thing. I know there's going to be trials, and I know there's going to be senior trials, and all this other stuff. But am I treating it, or am I seeing it the way He sees it? So go ahead and read that one.
Keep pursuing shalom with everyone, and the holiness without which no one will see the Lord.
All right, so what does He say? Keep pursuing shalom with everyone and the holiness. Right. So we just a little bit ago, we said the reality about our meditation on holiness. Are we really doing it? Probably not. And that's okay, because now we need to start doing that. But what is Paul telling him? I have to keep. Holiness is not something that I just have to think about. It's something that I have to pursue. Say louder. Yeah. It's a lifestyle. And not only is it a lifestyle, but it's like, remember when we learned about the steeplechase? What's it? What do we remember about the steeplechase? It's always moving. Right? So I'm holier than I was 15 years ago. But that holiness is not going to be, the same holiness I have now is not sufficient for 15 years from now. So I have to keep pursuing it. And it's interesting that word for pursue persecuted, for example, right? And we saw this when Paul persecuted the saints. We saw it when he did Stephen, right? What was his intent? What was Paul's intent when he was persecuting these people? Yeah, but in order to kill him, he had to catch him. And you think these guys weren't moving around trying to not get killed? And so we have to go after holiness with that same fervor that, if I could, I'd kill it. You know, like he did me really dirty and I got to put it away. So when something is valuable, and the reason why I don't pursue it, and this is the key here, is because I don't value it in my sight. Because if I valued it, what would I do? I'd go after it, right? And John, I'm going to use you for a quick second. I don't really embarrass you. Yeah, I'm saying I'm embarrassed, John. So when John first came to the church, not first came, but when he first met Sharon. Okay, we'll just say this. I remember some of the conversations that we had. Yeah, and I'll tell you one thing I remember very clearly. He said, I'm going to marry her. I don't care what anybody says. And no, that happened. Yeah. That's a true story. That happened on my futon in the bedroom at our apartment at Lakeside Estate. So you know that's a true story. But my point is, that's the kind of fervor that we have to have for holiness, right? Because why did John pursue her? Yeah, because it was the object of his desire, right? So why don't we desire that holiness the same way? So y'all talk to John later on and ask him for tips on how to do it. So when something is valuable, I'm going to keep pursuing it. See, the reason a lot of us aren't going to go on this journey is because, and Brother Jeff kind of touched on it in a different way, actually in a completely opposite way, but I'm going to use the word anyway. It's because the journey has become, it's become common in our sight, right? It's just another thing that we have to do.
Yep.
that was also part of my journey. You know, that hardship was part of him changing my perspective, because I had to see things differently than the way I was seeing them before, right? Before, I was teaching, right? I was doing the Sundays and all that stuff. And then when I came back, you know, it took me a little while to come back, but I was teaching differently because of experience. And that's what he has to, and that's part going to be part of this journey, these journeys that we're going through, is we have to have certain experiences. But many of us are never going to begin it because, again, because it's become common, right? We get bored, or whatever the reason is, it's become common. And I like Hebrew, that word common, halal. It's the polar opposite of the other one, kadosh, right? So when he's making you holy, he's taking you from common and setting you apart and making you holy. Another word to look at, another way to translate common is profane. And so when I am looking at this journey, when I'm looking at this walk and all this other stuff as common, right? We don't, that's kind of like a, you know, it's kind of a neutral word, right? Unless I start seeing it as profane. But that's the reality, right? When I treat it as common, the reality is, did God give me this? Did God assign me? Did he direct me to go on this journey? Yes. So when I'm treating it as profane, what am I saying about him indirectly? I'm profaning him, because I'm treating what he gave me as if I'm not giving it the dignity and the respect that it deserves. So we'll move on to the next part. There were like, how many? The 7 discernment steps that we had to go through or whatever. We're going to talk about those again. We're gonna dive a little bit deeper. I don't have a lot of time left, do I? We're going to dive a little bit deeper into a few of them. I think we're going to do three today. So what was discernment step number 1? Oh, man. He said he's going to cheat. The revelation of the journey occurs as I worship. Right. So what am I looking for this month? Y'all, I'm looking for revelation. How do I get it? You worship. Why? Because he designed the components of worship as the mode of multilateral communication. All right, I'll explain that here. So let's look at the components first, and then we'll talk about the multilateral nature. All right. So now what we're doing right now is worship, right? And even this is bilateral. How so? Because when the Spirit is speaking, whatever arena it's in, when he's teaching us, he's not teaching us so that we can just sit there and hear him teach us. Yeah, I talked about this a month ago. He expects a response, right? Whether it's agreeing or disagreeing, there has to be a response, right? So he teaches, I respond. So how do I know that I responded positively? Is when I walk away knowing if the Spirit is definitively telling me something to do or stop doing, and I obey. Right? All modes of teaching are bilateral. I remember DIT. Oh, man. I was so mad at Brother Jeff for like a year and a half. I was mad. And then the Spirit had, we were doing Holy Spirit, and he started talking about the way that the Spirit disciplines people or something like that. And I was like, ah. I'm sitting here getting mad at Brother Jeff for disciplining me, and I'm like, that was the Spirit the whole time. So now I have to do something about it, because I can't just stay mad now that I know the truth, right? And the rest is history. So obviously, sorry, Brother Jeff, for being mad, but I understood, right? Because what? I responded to the lesson, right? And then all of us have done that. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. All right. Go ahead and turn to Hebrews 6:10.
so unfair as to forget your works and the love you showed for him in your past service to his people and in your present service too.
All right, so which mode of worship is this?
Service?
Service? No, sacrificial giving. Right. Now, why do we say service? Because when you think of sacrificial giving, what do we think?
Oh, money.
We know that it's not the truth, that it's not only money. But we just automatically think, sacrificial giving, I'm going to give whatever offering, a ram or a dollar or whatever it is, right? So we know that it's not solely about money, right? So what are those investments, just for fun? Okay, yeah. Let's go with that. Time, labor, respect, finances,
talent,
abilities. So even in sacrificial giving, there's a multilateral nature to that too, right? Because I can't give to him unless he first gives to me, right? And so when I give to him, or I'm sorry, when he gives to me and I give back to him, what does Hebrews say? He's not unfair to forget your work. So what happens when I perform that work? What does fairness say? Yeah, no. Fairness says you did work, so I'm gonna
pay you.
Give back to you, and then what am I gonna do with that? I give back to him. So this is a process that should never stop. Fortunately, it stops. And the reality is sometimes his response doesn't come directly from him to me. Right? If I bless Ketty, does that necessarily mean that Ketty's going to bless me back?
No.
No, it can come from, yeah, if we're functioning as a true community, right? And when somebody discerns that I have a need the same way I discerned she had a need, what do? We sacrificially give. And what is that? It's worship. Right? So what's the connection between sacrificial giving and receiving the specifics of the, or receiving the revelation? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what the connection is. You know, I don't know. Yeah, I literally don't know. All I know is that revelation is going to come through worship, right? So what's my responsibility? Is it to understand how? No, it's to. Yeah, it's just to trust and do. Is when he says worship, I gotta worship. And what does he say to do? Worship. All right. I got to see my service to him and others as more than just doing what's good. Yeah, it's not just doing good works. Good works aren't bad, but it's more than that. Because as I worship my Father through my giving, what's he doing? He's positioning me. Right? Invisibly, I don't know how he does it. But somehow he's positioning me to hear from him. Anybody like heard from him in the weirdest places, in the weirdest situations? Anybody like ever like heard from the Lord in a place that you did not expect to hear from him? Oh, the Lord's always at Popeye's. Yeah.
Only on Tuesdays.
That's
he said it.
Okay. So he spoke to you at Popeye's? Yeah, but I mean, and that happens. Like, when I'm in the right place, I may not understand it, but why can't God be at Popeye's? He can be at Popeye's.
He ain't at KFC.
He knew where to find.
Yeah. Yeah. Tuesday night, back when it was 99 cents. Yeah, but that's the truth, right? Is when I'm doing it, it's sometimes it's going to come when I'm not.
I was saying, can you find my kids?
All right, now prayer. Bilateral communication. When I forget that prayer, and this is what happens to me. I forget that prayer is bilateral.
Why not?
What does bilateral mean? I talk to him, he talks to me. That was supposed to be. See, me, I like to do that unilateral communication. Right, where I'm talking to him, I'm letting him hear what I got to say, and then I'm done, right? But when I forget that it's bilateral and that level of worship has to be appropriate to my maturity level, right? We talked about this earlier. I can't go back and do it like I used to do it, right? For some of us, we have to restore that level of worship that we once had, and for some reason we stopped doing it, right? And when I say some people, I'm included in that group. All right, so discernment step number two. I have to know the specific starting points for our beginning steps, or for my beginning steps, right? Go ahead and turn to Matthew. Just hold on to it for a second. Because it's through worship, I'm going to receive the specifics, okay? Go ahead and read.
The young man said to him, I have kept all these. Where do I still fall short? Yeshua said to him, if you are serious about reaching the goal, go and sell all your possessions, give to the poor, and you will have riches in heaven. Then come, follow me. But when the young man heard this, he went away sad because he was wealthy.
All right, so who wants the specifics? That's a real question. Who here wants the specifics? I want to know what I at least the starting point. Mm-hmm. I'd like to know more. But yeah, I want to know. But a lot of us are like this guy. Right? He asked the question. What was the question? He said, where am I falling short? And that's the question we should be asking. Where do I fall short? In other words, what do I have to do? Because, prior to this, there's a bunch of other stuff that he told the young ruler, or the young rich man. And his response was, you got to do all these things, right? And what was the young man's response? He was sad. Was he sad because he didn't? He didn't want. I'm sorry. Say it louder. That's the word. He did not have the willingness. He told himself he did, right? Because he did all these other things. Because Jesus told him you got to keep the mitzvah. He said those last six commandments, you got to do those things. So on one level, he did want to do it, but he didn't want it as bad as he thought he would. So what specific things are preventing me from being in a place to go all in? What's preventing me from saying, because there are things, honestly, there are things that, there's certain things I had to in this past month. And it's not the same for everybody. But I have to ask myself, what things are more important to me than what God has for me? See, these are the things that will, like this guy, will make me walk away completely. Right? And I wish I could say that, it's all theoretical. We've seen it happen. We've seen people walk away. Because the requirements are too hard. See, when I'm knowingly unwilling, I should be asking myself, why am I even here? If I know that I'm not willing to take those steps, yeah, tell me. I'm not personally, but why do you think people even stay when they're not willing to go? Find something else to do on Friday.
If you're in a job and you don't progress in your job, you don't just quit immediately. You wait until you find another job.
I don't quit a job immediately. but he's right. He makes a good point. There's a lot of us, we stay in things, we do things because we don't feel like we have any other options. I do it because I have to. Yeah. Right. But then I'm just going through the motions, right? And so we have to start asking ourselves, like, I'm here. Am I really willing? And if I'm not, then what am I actually doing here? Now, I'm not saying that people should leave. That's absolutely not what I'm saying. But we have to start asking these questions, because that separation, we talk about it, right? Sheep and the goats, and then sheep and the sheep, bellwethers, middle, and outlier. Yeah, there's always going to be the separation. I just have to figure out what side of the separation do I really want to be on. So, what are my real motives? Why do I put on this mask, and why do I say the things that I say? And that's a hard question, because when I found out how fake I was, you know, and I'm serious, like, we're talking about Jacob, right? Because I'm a big-time Jacobite, right? And what do we know about Jacob? Jacob likes... Was that? He'll fake it because that's his nature. That's how he survives. That's how he gets what he, you know, what he needs or whatever. So I gotta address that guy. What are my real motives? And that's not a friendly question to ask all the time, because it's hard being a Jacobite, and then you're like, okay, well, I realize that I'm a Jacobite, so here's what I'm going to do to not be a Jacobite, and in reality, yeah, I'm still a Jacobite trying to not be a Jacobite, right? That guy's got to die. All right, discernment step number 3. I have to know that he's cognizant of my fear before the journey, but yet he gives me everything I need to conquer them before I begin. Go ahead and turn to Exodus 13, 17, 18.
After Pharaoh had let the people go, God did not guide them to the highway that goes through the land of the Philistine, because its way was close by. God thought that the people, upon seeing war, might change their minds and return to Egypt. Rather, God led the people by a roundabout route through the desert by the Sea of Suf. The people of Israel went up from the land of Egypt fully armed.
All right, so we read this earlier today. He took them out of Egypt, and they could have taken them to the land of the Philistines, but he knew they'd be scared. So he took them a roundabout route. But here's reality. Even though he took them through that roundabout route, did Israel have to face the Philistines?
Yes.
Yeah. Eventually they still had to do it. It just had to be in the right time and in the right season. So, I only have a few minutes, but conquering my fear begins with being cognizant of some of my fears. I'm not going to be cognizant of all of them, but I have to be cognizant of at least the obvious ones, and then acknowledging certain realities about fear. Right, so we're going to talk about some realities, and then we'll close it down. But reality number one, my fear, it immobilizes me, or it paralyzes me. Right, so go ahead and turn to 1 Samuel 17, 10, and 11.
The Philistine added, "I challenge Israel's armies today. Give me a man, and we'll fight it out." When Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were shaken and terrified.
Who's here talking?
Goliath.
I challenge Israel's army today. So who's he talking to?
All Israel.
The armies. What was their occupation? What was their job description?
To kill.
They're supposed to be the ones out there fighting, right? But when they heard the words, they were shaken and they were terrified. So these guys went from being professional killers to, when they faced their Goliath, maybe I'm not a killer anymore. What am I going to do? But that's the reality of fear. Certain fears will completely immobilize me. It'll take me out of everything. They stop me from doing the things that I would normally do. Right? So, let's talk about some of those things. Right? How does fear immobilize us from doing certain things?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. if she's the only one doing it for other people and nobody's doing it for her, then yeah, she's going to get beat up and she's going to stop doing it. And now nobody's covered. Right? So that's a good one. You know, I don't do the things I know to do because for whatever reason. Like one for me is, y'all know I like to talk and I like to talk trash. But there are certain environments where I'm not going to talk the same way I do because maybe I'm afraid of offending a certain person, right? Or I don't know, whatever. I mean, I'm not really afraid of offending anybody, but I'm just an example, right? But do we ever change the way that we talk and the way that we act? Yeah, to pacify a certain group of people. Yeah, we do it all the time. You know? All right, so let's talk about another reality. My deepest fears are actually suppressed deep within my soul. Right? Because if it's something that I'm really afraid of, then my soul doesn't want to address it at all. But God's going to address them. Right? No. Well, I don't. Yeah, I don't think it is because, I mean, it's one of those, what's the word? You know, I don't have to consciously think about trying to preserve my life. You know, and certain fears, like, no, I'm just going to avoid it altogether and deal with it, if I even recognize it, another time. So they stay there until they're ultimately drawn out during the refinement process. And that's subject to time and season. Same thing as sanctification, right? There's certain sins that we have that he works on. But then when that's dealt with, he has to go to the next one. And the next one is much deeper and much more difficult than the one I dealt with previously. So, in the meantime, while those are staying deep within my soul, I have to honestly address the big fears that I am aware of. Right? But that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to understand them. Right? Why will I not understand? You know, dealing with fears doesn't mean that I understand the way it works and all this stuff. Because what good does knowing the way it works really do me? Right? If I know that I'm scared because of this, and this, you know, at the end of the day, I still have the fear. Right? So go ahead and turn to, what's the next one? I don't know where we are. Oh, I'm on the wrong page, that's why. Yeah, 2 Timothy 1:7. See, the reason I'm not going to understand them is because in the spiritual arena, fear is completely irrational. It makes zero sense. In the soul arena, it makes sense, but not in the spirit. Good job.
For God gave us a spirit who produces not timidity, but power, love, and self-discipline.
All right, so what do we know about the spirit of a believer? Yeah, that's true. But it comes. But our spirit is the offspring of God. That's the Israel of God, right? And so, what did Paul tell Timothy or whoever? That spirit he gave us doesn't produce timidity, but power and self-discipline. So when I'm dealing with fears, I already know that at least on a spiritual level, it doesn't even make sense. But on a soul level. You know, well, that's actually where it exists. It exists in my intellect, my emotions, and my persona. So, I have to address those things now. I have to be cognizant of them and allow him to take them out of us, right? Because I'm not naturally going to just, at least for the most part, I'm not just going to try and face it. I have to do that by the power of the Spirit. And I can acknowledge it, but actually facing it is something that his Spirit has helped me do. All right, next reality. Fear is indirectly proportional, we're going back, to my worship. So what does that mean? What does it mean that fear and worship are indirectly proportional? Okay, I see some physical examples. There you go. So the more that fear is operational in my life, the less I'm going to worship. Sorry. perception of that. Yeah. I was afraid. I was afraid that I would be labeled as a fanatic. You guys remember what fanaticism is? That excessive, irrational zeal. Right? Yeah, that's old school DFT. But it's true. I mean, for me, it was true. Because I thought it was silly. And if I'm in my soul, I still do kind of think it's silly, but I don't worship out of my soul. Yeah, I was afraid of appearing, and this is part of my environment, indoctrinated. Like, you know, I didn't want to be like one of those cult guys that was going to be up there, you know. Yeah, kind of. I was going to do that. But that was one of my fears. I said, I'm going to do this up to a point. Now, what was going to happen when the Spirit said, well, I do want you to do all this? Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, no, now, but I'm not bowing right now. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. But when he gives you that option and says, hey, are you going to cross this line? That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Right. Right. It's obedience or sacrifice. What's it going to be? See, when I'm walking by the Spirit, sacrifice and submission, they cause me to act despite my fear. You know, and we should all get to the point where, man, it doesn't matter what people think. It really doesn't. You know, because I know who I serve, and it's not them. It's not. And the last one, I have to actively face my fears for as long as I live. You know, facing them and defeating them doesn't necessarily make them go away, right? And it was something like we were talking about earlier. It just changes my perspective on it. So turn to this this last one, First John 4:18.
There is no fear in love. On the contrary, love that it has achieved its goal gets rid of fear, because fear has to do with punishment. The person who keeps fearing has not been brought to maturity in regards to love.
All right. So how do I address this fear? It's through mature love, perfect love. But it's not just having it. It's through applying it and reapplying it and reapplying it and reapplying it and reapplying it, because maturity doesn't stop, right? So I can't graduate to this maturity, whatever you want to call it, this type of love, and then apply last month's maturity, right? But that's the formula he gave us. It has to be driven out through mature love. So although it drives out fear, I cannot assume that I'm always gonna walk in with mature love. You know, can that happen? Yeah. Will that happen? Probably not for me. You know, I'm not always going to be in mature love. And so when I'm not walking in mature love, then what happens? That's when we start to backslide. Right? And when you're backsliding and your mature love is now over there, how do you address the fear? Did that fear go away? No. It's still there. Right now I just don't have the weapons to deal with it. Now, I was thinking about this. I don't know if it applies. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But it was like those that demon, right? The demon got driven out the guy, and then no, not that one. Well, anyway. Yeah, he brought like seven of his friends, and they came, and it was even worse than the first time.
It's always a fight.
Right?
You got to fight to stay delivered.
Yeah. We have to, what, strive towards the mark, because remember that analogy you used to use of the that little conveyor belt type thing, right? Because when I started backsliding, now I'm starting to deal with, you know, times seven. So, and I think I'm going to make, I have 1 minute conclusion. I have 1 month until my journey, my new journey question. What specific actions do I have to take now? And for those who are honest about being on the fence, it's not a question.